This is New England Public Radio's Jazz Beat. I'm Tom Reaney with a podcast edition of my jazz blog, which you can find at nepr.net. Today's podcast is focused on B.B. King, the great blues man who died on May 14, 2015. His 90th birthday anniversary was September 16th. Quotes in this podcast come from King's autobiography, Blues All Around Me.
Way back yonder in the days of old, the men was working but not saving any dough. Then came a woman looking real cool. She said to herself, "Now that's my fool. I'm gonna ball tonight. I'm gonna ball tonight. Well, I can't break the rule because every man is some woman's fool."
B.B. King has been a constant in my life for the better part of five decades. I've been deeply moved by musicians across a wide range of styles, but B.B.'s unique among them as a player who overwhelms me with emotion almost every time I hear him. Foremost among the rush of feelings I experience is gratitude for the man who wore the crown of King of the Blues with dignity and purpose throughout his long career. Or perhaps in keeping with a person who embodied such majesty, it's more fitting to say he wore it for a lifetime, as even his descriptions of a Mississippi childhood spent orphaned and farming are imbued with a sense of wonder and purpose. In a 1967 interview, he mused over how far he'd traveled during the 10 years he spent plowing, six of them behind a mule. "I never heard of a vacation until I left the plantation," he recalled, but added that it was one of the happiest parts of my life. B.B.'s work ethic guided his career as a bandleader who was renowned for maintaining a grueling schedule. For over 40 years, he averaged 331 nighters a year. King said that living on the road makes you either mean or patient. "I hope it's made me more patient," he said, while adding that he was often tested by cops who liked to mess with black men in Cadillacs. When they'd ask me how I got a car like this, I'd say I earned it. Of all the giants of American music, B.B. impresses me as one of the few who never needed a second act, though he certainly benefited by a second audience. King's ascendancy began in the early 50s. He weathered a period when blues began losing ground with blacks in the early 60s, then made the transition to new venues and a new audience later in that decade. All the while, he remained true to himself, his music, and the ritual practices of the blues. King began touring in 1951 on the strength of his number one R&B hit, 3 O'Clock Blues, and over the next dozen years, he released a prolific stream of singles. Most of these sides featured arrangements by Maxwell Davis, an L.A.-based saxophonist and one of the unsung heroes of modern blues. His chart for B.B.'s theme song, "Every Day I Have the Blues," was typical of what made their collaboration ideal. King said he had a crisp and relaxed sound I'd never heard before. "Maxwell Davis didn't write majestically, he wrote naturally, which was my bag. He created an atmosphere that let me relax." Many of the songs from the Maxwell Davis era remained at the center of King's repertoire. One would be hard-pressed to contain a best of B.B. King with anything less than 24 records from this period. But with only a handful of these charting as radio hits, his popularity was driven mostly by personal appearances and a perfected celebration of the blues as cultural spectacle. B.B.'s popularity grew exponentially with the steady release of live concert recordings in the mid-60s. Live at the Regal, Blues is King, and Alive and Well are virtually unequaled examples of a bluesman working his magic before theater and nightclub audiences. For a generation of young whites just then discovering the blues, B.B.'s 1964 performance at the Regal Theater in Chicago was both a primer on what they'd been missing and a stunning eye-opener on how enthralled his fan base could be. Few crescendos have been more passionately acclaimed by an audience than King's performance of "How Blue Can You Get."
"I gave you a brand new Ford. You said I want a Cadillac. I bought you a $10 dinner. said thanks for the snack. I let you live in my penthouse. You said it was just a shack. I gave you 7 children, and now you wanna give them back.
King was intensely disciplined and focused as a musician and bandleader. Long after he was hailed as the most influential blues guitarist of all time, he continually worked at developing greater mastery of the Gibson ES that he personified as Lucille. He also grew as a figure who understood that his kind of success meant taking on the roles of spokesman, teacher, and ambassador. In this regard, his heroes included the Royals of Jazz, Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and Nat King Cole, for there were no comparable models among blues players, and to this day, meaning for all time, no other blues man will come close to attaining the fame of the King. Nonetheless, even this soulful preacher of the blues saw his popularity among African Americans begin to decline in the 60s. But serendipity was a career-long companion of King's, and as one audience receded, another came to the fore. When whites began discovering the blues in the mid-60s, King made the transition to new and larger venues without compromising the spectacle or his role as its conjurer. Many other bluesmen and women made the leap too, but few had B.B.'s gift for maintaining the music's ecstatic power and for making every club, arena, and student union feel as down home as a Chitlin' Circuit juke joint. After signing with ABC in 1962, B.B.'s popularity grew with the release of the concert albums and his biggest chart success, The Thrill Is Gone, which reached number 15 on the Billboard Hot 100 Pop chart and number 3 on the R&B. It's hard to believe today, but I actually got tired of hearing B.B. all over the radio in the summer of 1970. King's successes, Grammy Awards, honorary doctorates, product endorsements, halls of fame, audiences with popes, presidents, monarchs, and other heads of state, did nothing to diminish his compassion for people in need. His 1970 album, Live in Cook County Jail, signaled his new commitment to bringing the music into prisons. He gave dozens of prison concerts over the years, and his 1990 recording, Live at San Quentin, won the National Medal of the Arts. He said his motive was never for money, but only the satisfaction of touching souls that needed to be touched. It didn't matter that I'd never been in criminal trouble myself. I'd known men who'd gone to prison and understood how the circumstances of their lives led them there. Shakespeare reminds us that monarchs often do better by their kingdoms than their castles. King readily acknowledged that while he was a good financial provider for the 15 children he fathered with numerous women, he was largely absent from their lives. He confessed, "I have not been a good father. I was an absentee father. Sometimes I must seem foreign to my children." The first time I saw BB in person was at the Sugar Shack in Boston. I was underage, so I never got closer than the lobby of the club. But even from that slight remove, hearing BB in person was all it took to turn me into a fan for life. The next time he came through town, I caught the band in full view, and what a sight! 7 tuxedo gents playing an opening pair of instrumentals before the king entered to the punching riffs of Every Day I Have the Blues. I saw him dozens of times thereafter, about 50 altogether, and was never less than awestruck. BB's repertoire didn't change much, so even blues-playing friends often asked why I kept going. But that's like asking people why they go to church every week. There are just some customs worth attending to ritually and continually. To anyone who asked if I recommended seeing him, I answered that it should be regarded as a cultural duty. The only time I met BB for more than a handshake was when he played the UMass Fine Arts Center in December 1999. At his post-concert reception, I was treated to a private audience with the king for about 15 minutes. BB was poised to sign autographs for dozens of fans who'd queued up outside the door, but he showed no signs of impatience with my questions. I asked him about the Philip Morris Superband World Tours he'd made in 1990 with Ray Charles and a band that was stocked with jazz greats, including Harry Sweets Edison, Gene Harris, Kenny Burrell, Ray Brown, and Harold Jones. He still seemed excited by the memory and said that hearing Kenny Burrell, who was his favorite jazz guitarist, was like hearing a lecture from a great university professor every night. King's humility in discussing these and other jazz artists was confirmed several years later when I befriended the saxophonist Gary Smullyan. Gary's baritone anchored the sax section on both of the Superband's tours, and he said BB was amazingly gracious and respectful of the players, riding on the band bus and delighting in the company of musicians whom he admired.
Saturday dance, I heard they crowded the floor. It's awfully different without you. Don't get around much anymore. I thought I'd visit the club.
I also asked him about the big band recordings he'd made in 1959 of the Ellington Standard, Don't Get Around Much Anymore, and his session with Count Basie, in which he sang Every Day I Have the Blues. BB told me he'd hardly ever been asked about those records, and he recalled being nervous at the prospect of recording with Basie, whom he'd first heard at the Jones Night Spot in Indianola, Mississippi, around 1939. In his autobiography, he recalled Basie as a round-faced man whose music was modern and swinging and beautifully loud, as bluesy as anything I'd heard in the Delta. I believe I listened harder that night than anyone in the history of listening. King was born in Itabena, Mississippi, a rural crossroads, in 1925, but he long identified the nearby city of Indianola as his birthplace. It was there, as a young teen, where he discovered his passion for music and a model for what he would project from stages around the world. "I'm a fan first," he said. "As a kid hanging around Church Street, the presentation of music was so powerful, I couldn't help but jump for joy. I had discovered art, or truth, or whatever you want to call it. I had seen a light I'd follow forever." The blues light is now dimmed. It's been flickering for decades, but King's high profile helped assure that the world would be aware of blues as the creation of blacks and the bedrock of African-American music. While he long lamented the decline of interest among African-Americans for the music, he personally encouraged many of the whites who idolized him and sought his imprimatur. Whites have increasingly been the face of the music since the 60s, but as long as he was on the road, B.B. was its unrivaled standard-bearer. Maybe that's what kept him out there so long. Alas, the King of Blues is dead. Long live the King. For additional material on B.B. King, including concert footage and memorabilia, visit the jazz blog at nepr.net. Thanks to Katie Wright for production assistance. For New England Public Radio's Jazz Beat, I'm Tom Reaney.